In the last verse, Krishna promised that he would come and deliver his devotees from the ocean of birth and death if they dedicate all their activities to him and if they perform pure devotional service, always meditating on him. So, then why should Arjuna fight if he should just, Krishna just said, just meditate on me and then I will deliver you? And the answer is because his fighting is devotional service and therefore he should perform it for Krishna. And so now he speaks text 8. Mayeva mana adhatsva mayim buddhin niveshaya niva sishyasi mayeva atta urdvamna samshaha. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always, without a doubt. So we see in this verse the word mayi appears 3 times. So that means upon me. There's no other interpretation unto me. It means Shamasundar, with yellow cloth and dhoti and peacock feather and flute and garland. Shamasundar. And this is a very elevated level of devotional service where one has attachment for Krishna. So it's talking of at least asakti, this higher level of devotional practice, the highest level of the Madhyam Adhikara. So he's saying you fix your intelligence and mind upon me, not on your own soul. This is higher than self-realization. And in order to fix the mind, actually the intelligence needs to be fixed on Krishna also. The intelligence needs to be engaged. And so it's good if our service is a little challenging, or we're trying to figure out a way that we can preach or serve the Lord using our intelligence. And thus our subtle body, the antakarana, is absorbed in Krishna. The mind and intelligence are fixed in Him. So thus you will live with me, Krishna says. Not like the Mishrabhaktas mentioned in the 7th chapter, who gradually come to me. They attain only my Aishwarya feature. But one who meditates directly on me with love and attachment, he attains my Madhurya feature. So, one might naturally think that, well, that sounds very nice, but I don't know if I can do that. Constantly fix my mind and intelligence on Krishna. So what can I do if I can't do this? Is there something else? And Krishna says, yes. The next platform, the next stage is text 9. Atha chitam samadhatum na shaknoshi mi stiram abhyasa yogeno tato mam chaptum nananyaya. Oh, my dear Arjuna, a winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. So here Krishna calls Arjuna Dhananjaya, that you've conquered many enemies and won much wealth. So now capture the wealth of meditation and conquer the real enemy, the mind. And you can do this. You're quite able to do that. So if one can't do the first platform given in text 8, then this is the next one down. This is Abhyasa Yoga. Abhyasa Yogena Tato. That means sadhana bhakti, because abhyas means practice. If you cannot do the first one naturally, then practice controlling the mind and fixing it on me. When your mind becomes accustomed to thinking of me, it will be very easy to attain me. So still working with the mind and performing activities which directly engage the mind in thinking of Krishna. Directly fixing the mind on Krishna. So still we're dealing with the antakarana, the internal senses. And by practicing bringing the mind to Krishna, then gradually mam ichaptum dhananjaya, then one will develop a desire to attain Krishna. The person in the first verse, he has that desire, very strong desire to attain Krishna. So Prabhupada comments, in this verse, two different processes of bhakti yoga are indicated. The first applies to one who has actually developed an attachment for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by transcendental love. And the other is for one who has not developed an attachment for the Supreme Person by transcendental love. For the second class, there are different prescribed rules and regulations one can follow to be ultimately elevated to the stage of attachment to Krishna. So that attachment to Krishna was the first verse. And this is the second one that can bring you to that first verse. And in the last paragraph, Prabhupada says, to practice the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, one should, under the guidance of an expert spiritual master, follow certain principles. One should rise early in the morning, take bath, enter the temple and offer prayers, and chant Hare Krishna, then collect flowers to offer to the deity, cook foodstuffs to offer to the deity, take prasadam, and so on. There are various rules and regulations which one should follow, and one should constantly hear Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam from pure devotees. This practice can help one rise to the level of love of God, and then he is sure of his progress into the spiritual kingdom of God. So the main practice in sadhana bhakti is smartavya satatam vishnu, vismartavya najatu chit. So all the rules and regulations are meant for this, for these two main rules, to always remember Krishna and never forget him. Etayor eva kinkara, they're all servants of these two rules. So then the commentaries, Arjuna says, my mind flickers like the wind, Krishna, I don't have the strength to control it. What should I do? And he answers that if you cannot do abhyasa yoga, Arjuna, and your mind is influenced by ignorance, avidya, then you should work for me. Then he makes the next point, this next point in the text 10. Abhyasa pyasamartosi madkarma paramo bhava madartam abhikarmani purvam siddham abhapsisi. If you cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. So this is the level of karma yoga, working for Krishna. What kind of work? Building a temple, or an office, or gardens, or watering the garden, or so many kinds of activities. Bowing down, also, different things. Prabhupada comments that one who is not able even to practice the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, so here, it's not that the people are sinful and that they can't follow the four regular principles, but he's talking about the regular principles which he was discussing in the previous paragraph, in the previous commentary. To practice the regular principles of bhakti yoga, one should rise early, enter the temple, chant Hare Krishna, offer flowers, etc. So if one can't do that, practice the regulative principles of bhakti yoga under the guidance of a spiritual master, then he can still be drawn to this perfectional stage by working for the Supreme Lord. How to do this work has already been explained in the 55th verse of the 11th chapter. Madkarma karin Mad Parama, this verse. So there is all kinds of work, building temple, building garden, you know, planting flowers, watering the plants, all kinds of activities, praying, bowing down, circumambulating the temple, anything, any kind of activity also that, this is engaging the external senses, the bahya karana. This is the difference between this verse and the previous two verses. The previous two verses are dealing with the internal senses. And this one is easier because it's engaging the external senses. And Prabhupada explains one should be sympathetic to ISKCON. There are many devotees engaged in the propagation or preaching work and they need help. So if one can't directly practice these regular principles, rising early, bowing, you know, going into the temple room, chanting like this, then he can try to help the preaching work. And he says every endeavor requires land, capital, organization, and labor. So just like in a business, one requires a place to stay, some capital, some labor, etc. The only difference is that in materialism, one works for sense gratification. The same work can be performed for the satisfaction of Krishna, and that is spiritual activity. So it's also bhakti yoga, but it's just bhakti yoga on the platform of karma. So then he describes nishkam karma. If one has sufficient money, he can help in building an office or a temple for propagating Krishna consciousness, or he can help with publications. There are various fields of activity, and one should be interested in such activities. And then sakam karma yoga, or sakam karma level of bhakti yoga. If one cannot sacrifice the results of his activities, the same person can still sacrifice some percentage to propagate Krishna consciousness. This voluntary service to the cause of Krishna consciousness will help one to rise to a higher state of love for God, whereupon one becomes perfect. So you notice these three first verses, they gave results. The first one said that if you fix your mind and intelligence on me, you will live in me always. And text 9 said that if you follow the regular principles, then you will develop a desire to attain me. And text 10 said that, well, if you can't do that, you can work for me, and if you work for me, you will gradually come to the perfect stage. But in text 11, there's no result given. So that means that text 11 is of a different species or category. So we'll read that now. Athaita dava shakto si kartama yoga mashidaha sarva karma phalam yugam tata kuru yatatmanam. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act giving up all results of your work and try to be self-situated. Purport. It may be that one is unable even to sympathize with the activities of Krishna consciousness because of social, familial, or religious considerations, or because of some other impediments. If one attaches himself directly to the activities of Krishna consciousness, there may be objections from family members or so many other difficulties. For one who has such a problem, it is advised that he sacrifice the accumulated results of his activities to some good cause. Such procedures are described in the Vedic rules. There are many descriptions of sacrifices and special functions of punya, or special work, in which the result of one's previous action may be applied. Thus, one may gradually become elevated to the state of knowledge. It is also found that when one who is not even interested in the activities of Krishna consciousness gives charity to some hospital or some other social institution, he gives up the hard-earned results of his activities. That is also recommended here because by the practice of giving up, the fruits of one's activities, one is sure to purify his mind gradually, and in that purified stage of mind, one becomes able to understand Krishna consciousness. Of course, Krishna consciousness is not dependent on any other experience, like punya or good works, because Krishna consciousness itself can purify one's mind. But if there are impediments to accepting Krishna consciousness, then one may try to give up the results of his action. In that respect, social service, community service, national service, sacrifice for one's country, etc., may be accepted so that someday one may come to the stage of pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So now we're getting into the indirect processes. The first three are direct processes, because one's directly thinking about or serving or working for Krishna. But here, this is not directly for Krishna, so it's indirect. And it's hoped that one may gradually purify himself, and then when one has opportunity to serve Krishna directly. Although Krishna consciousness is not dependent on this kind of charity or good works or any kind of punya. But it's helpful. It can help to purify one's mind and intelligence so that one can be more attracted to, or one can understand Krishna consciousness more if he's more pure. So this is more like the activities which were described in the first six verses of the Bhagavad Gita, just doing karma yoga. And here the kind of the buzzwords are sarva karma phala tyagam, giving up all the fruit of your work. Whereas in the previous verse it said mad karma, mad artham, it worked for me, for my sake. But here it just says sarva karma phala tyagam. It doesn't say anything about for me. Okay. And then, text 12, which has been described as probably the most confusing verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Shreyohi jnanam abhyasad jnana dhyanat vishishyate dhyana karma phala tyagas tyagachanti ranandanam. If you cannot take to this practice, and engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation, and better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action, for by such renunciation one can attain peace of mind. Okay, so now we will write these six stages on. 1-2 is verse 10, which is, this is the confusing part. When in text 12, when he says, if you cannot take to this practice, he's referring to verse 10, which is working for Krishna. Then engage yourself in meditation. So meditation is a process to understand the Absolute Truth gradually, understanding Brahman, then Paramatma, then Bhagavan. And then, he says first knowledge, right? So knowledge is there, and then meditation. The meditation is that kind of meditation which you understand the Absolute Truth, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. And that's better than knowledge. So if you cannot take the practice of working for Krishna, then you can do knowledge, you can develop knowledge of matter and spirit, and better than that is meditation. But better than meditation is working for Krishna. So that's directly working for Krishna. Krishna. Working for Krishna is better than cultivating knowledge or doing meditation. But the karma yoga, which is described in verse 11, is beneath these other two. It's detached work. And it's also mentioned in verse 12. Okay. So let's read Prabhupada's commentary in the last paragraph in verse 12. In summary, to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the highest goal, there are two processes. One process is by gradual development, and the other process is direct. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the direct method, and the other method involves renouncing the fruits of one's activities. Then one can come to the stage of knowledge, then to the stage of meditation, then to the stage of understanding the Supersoul, and then to the stage of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One may take either the step-by-step process or the direct path. The direct process is not possible for everyone. Therefore, the indirect process is also good. It is, however, to be understood that the indirect process is not recommended for Arjuna, because he is already at the stage of loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. It is for others who are not at this stage. For them, the gradual process of renunciation, knowledge, meditation, and realization of the Supersoul and Brahman should be followed. But as far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, it is the direct method that is stressed. Everyone is advised to take to the direct method and surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So the direct method is the ones on top, the three on top, and the indirect are the three on the bottom. So these six platforms are being mentioned in these verses here. And this kind of untangles all the whole thing. Because otherwise it's rather difficult to kind of decipher how it's being presented. Because otherwise, you don't have the yoga ladder as we understand it. Karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, and then bhakti. So on top, we have the direct process of bhakti. And all of them are superior to any of the secondary processes. The secondary processes can help, and they're considered good, if one cannot take to the direct process. And that's why it's mentioned in the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so you can ask questions now. It's not impersonal knowledge. It's not saying, you know, on the path of monism here. I mean, to understand that you're not the body is also part of our practice, isn't it? That's the kind of knowledge. Brahma Gyan is also valuable for us. But if one is attached to the unmanifest, impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth, that's a different thing. That's a specific kind of cultivation of knowledge, which is antithetical to bhakti. But this one's not antithetical. Contrary. Linking the indirect process, which he discussed in the previous six chapters, to the processes that he's just described now. One is not cultivating monism or impersonal tendency, then the indirect path can be good. It can also be helpful. Yes. 11 is talking about a lower kind of karma yoga, which is lower than 10. Because Krishna was talking about working for me, or your karma yoga, then he brought the next, another kind of karma yoga, which is lower, which is just giving up the fruits of your work and not doing it for me, but just doing it for the sake of purification. Because he was talking about that, and he just he just gave the next lower thing down. And then he said, well, if you're not able to take to this direct method, right, of loving me, serving me, or at least working for me, then you should cultivate knowledge. And better than knowledge is meditation. But better than meditation is working for me. And giving up your work for me. Giving up the fruits of your work for me. But it is described, it was described in this chapter slightly, but it goes, the most detail is in the 18th chapter, where the process is described. But the elements or components or characteristics are mentioned in chapter 2 and 4 and 5 and 6 also. In chapter 5, the Karma Yogi goes through the Jnana stage in verses 17 to 25, something like this. Like Vidyavanaya Sampane, like from that. He's in Karma Yoga, but he comes through the Jnana stage realizing, you know, spirit, realizing and developing detachment from the sense object. Once meditating on Krishna, you know, Shama Sundar, with a flute, peacock feather, and garland, and all of this, then it's not just considered meditation. It's considered, you know, ecstatic bhakti yoga at a high level. Meditation, as I said, it's a gradual meditation on spirit from Brahman to Paramatma and then Bhagavan, which may not even be directly Krishna, maybe just Vishnu also, Narayan. But when one's meditating directly on Krishna in love, that's pure devotion. That's very elevated. And that's what he's talking about in text 8 also. What we're doing now, this is directly bhakti, because it's bhakti shastra, bhakti gyan, divya gyan. Yeah, because it's directly in Brahma Samhita and Bhagavatam. It's Srishti Leela of Krishna. And Vishnu and Chakravarti Thakur says, until we're completely purified from all contaminations, one should continue to hear Srishti Leela from Krishna, the Purusha avatars, all that. It's bhakti also. No, that's directly Krishna's creation of the material world. And because it's being presented through Bhagavatam like this, it's meant to help us to go through Aishwarya or Dasya Bhakti, to bring us to understanding that Krishna is God. Because his Purusha avatars are just tiny fractions of his power. Expansions of expansions of expansions of him. Right? And it just that small angsa or kala, not even an angsa, is a kala, is Mahavishnu. And just a small, such a far removed manifestation or expansion of Krishna. All the universes are coming out of the pores of his skin. That's just to help us. It's still going, it's glorifying Krishna. Right? It's Krishna who we're glorifying. This expansion of expansion, the universe is coming out of his skin holes. And that's just that expansion of Krishna. So this is the context of the Bhagavatam, Srishti Leela. It's meant to, you know, sober you up and awaken your relationship in sambandha gyan to Krishna. No, it's not. It just means like knowledge of the Upanishads to understand you're not this body, this spirit, aham brahmasmi, like this. And then later there's, you know, a super soul in everyone's heart, a supreme soul, who's guiding everything, giving direction. Madan Mohan. That's true. But it's also, it's meant, the whole purpose of all those things is that one is constantly trying to bring the mind to Krishna directly by waking up early, going to the temple, bowing down, offering flowers, and doing puja and chanting, you know, prescribed rounds. All of these things are, yeah, they're physical. But they are meant to be helping the person to bring the mind directly on Krishna. For one who can't just sit, he doesn't have this pure attachment and love, he can't just sit and do smarana, it's called smaranatma. It's not smaranatma, or even mananatma. It's abhyasa yogi. It's a little bit lower than these higher platforms where the person can just do lila smarana, like at a sakti. See, my personal understanding, although I don't have any proof, but like the first verse is talking about ragamarg, because it's talking about, well, the word attachment is used, and one can just meditate on Krishna. He's developed attachment to Krishna. And then the other level is sadhana bhakti or vaidhi sadhana bhakti, where one is trying to remember Krishna by waking up early, going to Mangalarti and chanting rounds. So one's still trying to remember Krishna, but he's using other things to help him, other practices of bhakti. Abhyasa yoga. Yoga here is referring to bhakti yoga. Abhyasa, the word abhyasa means practice. So it's almost exactly to the word sadhana. Sadhana means practice, and abhyasa means practice. So you could say it means abhyasa bhakti yoga, or it means sadhana bhakti yoga. I just wrote that so that you can see, when you look in the verse, you see those words. This is the key word in that verse, which tells you what it's talking about. Alright? It's different. It's not that he's already doing some work for himself and then he just offers the result to Krishna. No, every single thing he does is for Krishna. Every breath he breathes and every thought in his mind is already completely centered on Krishna. His mind intelligence, completely fixed on Krishna. But when someone said work for me, it means the work that you're already doing, then offer me the result, either a portion of it, or all of it, or most of it, which is the difference between Nishkam Karma Yoga and Sakam Karma Yoga. He's working from Krishna, but he can just sit down and just meditate on Krishna, or just think of Krishna. And whatever he does, his mind and intelligence totally fixed on Krishna. So it's not like he's doing the work to help him think of Krishna. He's just doing it out of love. He's doing so many services. Now, did you listen when we read the commentary to text 11? Okay. Because Prabhupada just mentioned the reasons there. I'll just pull out a few of the sentences so we don't have to read the whole thing again. And then I'll maybe say something about it. So, it's also found that when one's not interested in Krishna consciousness, he gives charity to some hospital, and he gives up the hard-earned results of his activities. That's also recommended here, because by the practice of giving up the fruits of one's activities, one is sure to purify his mind gradually. And in that purified stage of mind, one becomes able to understand Krishna consciousness. So it's purifying. Well, usually when people do things, they do them just to satisfy their senses. I mean mind. And just in general, right, selfish motivation. So when someone gives the fruits of his work to another higher cause, whether it's philanthropic or transcendental, he's purifying his rajagun, his motive passion, which is saying, keep the money, enjoy for yourself. Then he's giving that up and he's donating it to some other cause, and it helps to bring one to the mode of goodness. Maybe you have your own experience. When I was a teenager, I did some charity work, painting the wing of a mental hospital. And inside, while I was, after a few days, some of the residents of the hospital, they noticed that I was coming every day and painting, and they came to me and they started talking to me. Why are you doing this? And, I said, I'm just volunteering to do this. And they said, oh, it's so nice you've come to help us. And I remember when I was going home from this place, I felt completely different. And people were like looking at me, or sometimes they would say hello. People who would never usually say anything, they would say, oh, good morning, how are you? And like, I just felt a complete change in my consciousness from doing this thing. It wasn't Krishna conscious, that's for sure, but it was certainly higher than whatever I was before. It was helped me to come to the mode of goodness. So it's beneficial. Of course, that people may come to the mode of goodness and may never become devotees if they don't get some connection with other devotees. That's how we become devotees, as we discussed in chapter 7. So, it helps to alleviate the lower modes and bring one to the mode of goodness. That's why it's mentioned. It's indirectly helpful. We'll talk about this again in the 17th chapter when Krishna condemns it as completely abominable. So there's another statement in the end of the chapter 17 where he says all these things, if they're not directly done with the supreme objective in mind, then they're abominable, I think he used the word. So we'll discuss this again in chapter 17. Krishna. Can someone who's not following the four regular principles work for Krishna?
Yeah.
He says they're not following the regular, they can't follow the regular principles. He's talking about the other regulative principles. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Mishnu, Smaranam. But, No, but he's talking about the four regular principles. So, yes, they can. And so many people are doing it. And it means gradually they'll get purified and they'll be able to follow the four regular principles by working for Krishna. It's 10. If it's directly for Krishna, it's 10. It's bhakti yoga, but just at a low level, because there's still some sinful activities being performed. It's because devotees usually, when they read that, then they think that, oh, it's only for people who can't follow the four regular principles. No, it's not only for them. It's for people who can't follow the other regular principles. Whether they can or can't follow the four regular principles, it's for both of those people. Because there's so many people in India who follow the four regular principles, but they may not wake up early in the morning and put on tilak and do Mangal Arati and chant 16 rounds and all of those other things that we do. They may not be able to do those regular principles. So for them, they should do the mud karma, mud artam apikarma. Yeah, mud art, work for Krishna. Notice that that's like one consideration which made it difficult to balance all these things. But when you look at all the commentaries, then, well, especially Prabhupada's commentary, then it explains what he's meaning there. Because if it's better than meditation, right, then it must be bhakti. Because there's doing this other kind of thing. It's karma yoga. We know that there's karma yoga, jnana yoga, and ashtanga yoga in that order. And ashtanga yoga is much higher than karma yoga because it includes knowledge and detachment and meditation. So there, it's because both of them include giving up the fruit of one's work. At 10, karmapala tyaga is also there. But specifically, it's mad artam api karmani kurvam sevdin avapsasi. And it's directly for Krishna. I mean, I guess he could have said mad karma there. I don't know. But it would have been easier for us to understand if you said that. The person who's working, it would seem easier for him just to work for Krishna than to cultivate knowledge or to meditate. Yeah, that's why you should work for Krishna. Yeah, because working for Krishna is easy. It's like doing karma yoga, but you're doing it for Krishna. You're giving up the results, not just to some hospital or something, you're giving it to Krishna. But that means you have to have some sentiment for Krishna, or accept that Krishna is the Supreme. Matkama krin mat paramo. One has to accept that Krishna is God in order to give the fruits to Krishna. Otherwise, he's not going to give the fruits to Krishna. He's going to give it to, you know, the UNICEF or the Salvation Army or something like that.
Well, why would
like that, but it's not. Because if he accepts that Krishna is God, that means he's higher than the jnani or the yogi. As is described by Krishna himself in the end of chapter 6.
In the following, this view
to... All right. Maybe a beginner. Kali Prana. Yeah, because that's... Varnashram Dharma is generally given at the level of karma. Because one is not above his karma, so he has to act according to his psychophysical makeup or nature. And so that is tantamount or equivalent to this level here. This is karma, this is jnana, and this is yoga. So if one can't do any of these two, then he can just do varnashram. But better than that is daivi varnashram. It also teaches these things. He's talking about them now, and he taught them before in the first 6 chapters. But he says that there are levels, and that you should progress, you know, and the best thing is to worship me directly in bhakti. And the middle 6 chapters are focusing on that. That's considered the hidden secret of the Bhagavad Gita. And the first 6 chapters are to bring people into the Bhagavad Gita and to describe some of the subsidiary components of yoga to give you strength to, you know, go ahead. Because bhakti includes all of these principles here. Working, detachment, knowledge, meditation, renunciation. So that's why Krishna describes these indirect things also. But when we're studying it, we're studying it so that we can become pure devotees of Krishna. So it's even when we're talking about Dehi Nosminya Tadehe, it's with the purpose of purifying ourselves and realizing we're not the body so that we can come to a higher level of serving Krishna. Which level is a person in who works outside but he rises early and chants Hare Krishna and reads the Bhagavatam. And he's connected with the temple. and gives donations. Yeah, it means that he's... it's like he's doing a mixture of both of those. But he's doing... he's doing the sadhana bhakti. If he's doing it, then actually he's on that second level of vyasa yoga or sadhana bhakti. He's doing sadhana bhakti, but he's a grihastha, so he needs money, so he's working. But he's also able to rise early and chant and offer flowers and bow down, and he likes coming to Mangalarti. He wish he had more time that he could come to the temple. So it means he's at the level of text 9. But externally he may seem to be at text 10 just because he's working. But he's doing all the sadhana. Asas who do that, they rise at 1 or 2 in the morning and they do 5 hours of sadhana, and then they go to, and they wake up the children, give them breakfast, and then drive them to school, and then they go to work. I know there are some people like that. So, are they less than us? If anything, they're more than us, because it's very hard to do all those things every day. So, for this person, should he or must he give money for direct preaching activities? Well, the more he can give, the better for him, and the better for the preaching. I mean, it depends, if he's successful and he has enough money, then certainly he should give some, or as much as possible. And he likes to do that, generally, because he can also choose the preachers he likes to support or the programs he likes to support, like if he likes to give to Pariyatra, because he sees that they actually feed people and they're going around Braj and they're giving halava away and, Or if he sees the DD program, at the manor is really good, and they... So whatever he feels inspired to, they usually like to do that. It's just a matter of how much he's successful and how much his bills are and how much he has left, at the end of the week. Because nowadays it's so crazy to start to exist in the material world. I mean, there's different kinds of people, right? We also believed in God before we joined ISKCON, didn't we? Okay, but some people did. I did. I believed in God. Like when I told you when I got online for the feast during the Janmashtami festival in 1976, this hippie in front of me turned around and said, "Do you believe in Krishna? Do you believe Krishna's God?" I said, "Maybe. I believe in God. I don't know if Krishna's God. He fits the bill, sure. Okay, fine." But, in other words, I wasn't opposed to the idea that Krishna may be God, but I didn't know that he was. I had no evidence to say, yes, he's definitely God. I couldn't say that. So, but what was my concept of God? I don't know, it's kind of vague, isn't it? That's some supreme being, and he's controlling everything. It's like a supreme father, or like that, sitting on a big throne with a long beard, or something like this, I don't know. Christian idea of God, I mean, everybody has a different idea. Srila Prabhupada ki.